The State Cannabis Control Board recently took steps to implement regulations governing New York's burgeoning hemp industry, which came in the wake of regulatory actions in October designed to expand New Yorkers' access to medical marijuana. In light of these developments by the board, in conjunction with the Office of Cannabis Management, we're checking in with the state's de facto marijuana czar, Christopher Alexander, who is the Office of Cannabis Management's executive director and was the lead drafter of the Marijuana Regulation and Taxation Act, the legislation approved this spring, paving the way for the legalization of adult use of marijuana. Welcome to the show, Chris.
Thanks for having me. It's good to be here.
Well, it's really exciting for us to hear from you. So, did you ever envision yourself in your current job, say when you were helping to write the text of the bill that would create the post, or was that not a future you saw for yourself either because you didn't want the job or didn't think it could realistically happen?
Well, you know, that's a great question. I definitely thought we would get here. The timeline, I don't think anybody could have called it. There were definitely years when I thought it would be 10 years away, and then you know, back in 19, I thought it was going to happen, and it didn't. So, you know, I definitely can't call exactly how it happened. But no, I also didn't envision myself in the role. You know, it's been an exciting couple of months, you know, growing and learning with the team that we have here. And, you know, there's been so many folks throughout the years working on this effort. You know, and honestly, it's an honor to be able to serve and to see something that you've worked so hard on come to life. So I didn't expect it, but I'm taking it on, and I'm hopeful that we can you know, make sure that the program we build lives out to the vision.
Well, you've had experience on sort of both sides of the aisle. You've been in government, but you've also been on the outside of government trying to affect government policy. What do you see as the benefit in terms of your current position in making a difference in this space?
I mean, I think it's all about perspective. I mean, you know, if we really, you know, kind of going backwards, I think of it as three separate, distinct experiences that make really the role and you know, myself in the role that'll make me successful. I think one, being an advocate, trying to push, you know, this effort forward, understanding the communities that have been impacted, understanding, you know, the different voices that contributed to this effort. And their perspectives and what they were fighting for, from the patients, you know, the parents of epileptic kids, you know, hoping for access to the folks who are, you know, being stopped by the police and hoping for a day when the smell of marijuana won't be enough to, you know, shackle them with a you know, criminal conviction. I think, you know, that's one perspective that, you know, provides a bit of weight to the office. And then, you know, going into government to lead the negotiations on the bill, I think also provide perspective and understanding that, you know, we're not going to get everything that we wanted. We were really happy with how things turned out. But, you know, there was some other items that were included here in the original proposals that didn't make it through. And we understand that you take the good with the bad. And I think the last experience in the industry, which actually was the most recent experience, gave me a new perspective. Understanding how difficult it is to really succeed in this space, and really also put some more insight into, or gave me some additional insight into, you know, kind of what the role of government should be in creating this economic or fostering the growth of this economic opportunity.
The backdrop for the Marijuana Regulation and Taxation Act, at least from the perspective of the bill sponsors, especially Assembly Majority Leader Crystal Peoples Stokes, was that this campaign is largely a way to reverse the detrimental effects of the war on drugs that has been disproportionately harming people of color. So as a person of color, do you think it's important that there's people of color, not only in the role of executive director, but also chair of the Cannabis Control Board? Is that critical to achieving the broader goals of this legislation and all that it entails?
I mean, it definitely, you know, it's not something that I forget, you know, the opportunity that myself and the chairwoman, Tremaine Wright, the opportunity that we have as folks from these communities to lead this effort, you know, definitely something that we keep very squarely in mind. I think coming from a community, Southeast Queens, that has experienced, you know, over policing and has experienced, you know, significant criminalization related to this plan. It is something that kind of keeps things in perspective. But I think what's more important is that, you know, we have folks that, you know how to execute, particularly in such a large project, that understand how to bring in new voices, how to, you know, and make sure that the voices that have been, you know, active also have a place. You know, I think that's kind of also a thing that's really helpful about the role, is that, you know, we have a new perspective coming in. We have an understanding based on where we've sat of the harms of prohibition. But we also now need to lean on, you know, some other voices to make sure that we're building an industry that works, and that we're able to realize the promise that is, you know, a regulated, diverse and inclusive market.
In case you're just joining us, you're listening to the Capitol Press Room, and we're speaking with Chris Alexander, the recently appointed executive director of the State Office of Cannabis Management. So pivoting to the control board and the action that the Cannabis Control Board has been taking, at the most recent meeting, Board Chair Tremaine Wright announced what she described as, quote, sizable step forward implementing the cannabinoid hemp program. Can you explain the steps that were taken and why they are such a big deal for this industry?
Absolutely. I mean, you know, for the folks listening, you know, I imagine folks can't walk a block in their neighborhoods without, you know, seeing a store or a place of business selling CBD products.
And all and types of stores, too. Gas stations, grocery stores, smoke shops, whatever.
Exactly. So the significant action really was taking what, you know, kind of has largely existed for the last 5 years as a pilot program, and making it something that's much more robust. And so in 2015, New York launched the hemp pilot program, which focused mostly on research. And, you know, in 2019, legislation was passed to formalize that program and expand the regulations overseeing the cannabinoid hemp product, which we define as, you know, hemp products derivatives that are intended for human consumption. And so what we've done at the last board meeting was basically finalize the regulations that oversee licensing, testing standards, you know, production requirements of these products that are intended for human consumption, ensuring that New Yorkers have access to safe, regulated, tested CBD products in their communities. And so it is a very significant action. And, you know, I want to, you know, make sure that, you know, folks who've been working on this issue, who have been advocates for the issue, also are recognized for the work that they have pushing this along. I'll highlight a couple of high points of the program.
Please.
And what we've done. And so, you know, in 2020, the initial regulations were filed. 2021, the MRTA passed and made some amendments to those regulations. Those regulations were re-released for public comment. And so it's been a year that these regulations have been out there for folks to engage with. You know, some of the, I think, really important high points of this is really the laboratory testing requirements that are now in place for these products, you know, including additionally requiring, you know, some pretty significant packaging and labeling so that folks know the products that they're putting into their bodies. You know, we're actually requiring as well that processors have third-party CGMPs, which is good manufacturing practices, third-party audits of their manufacturing facilities to make sure that the products there are, you know, proper design and monitoring controls to ensure that their products that they're producing are of quality, that there are robust operating procedures in place, and their ability to investigate, you know, deviations, basically to make sure that we're able to prevent contamination of the CBD products that folks are ingesting. So, you know, a lot of this is making sure that folks have access to higher quality products, but also I think it's an important step forward in understanding, you know, the first part of what we set out to do with the passage of the MRTA, which is regulate, you know, and make sure that, you know, we've got control over a market that's growing rapidly in the state.
Well, you mentioned how you can't really go anywhere without seeing signs for CBD products, which is falling under this hemp regulation broader framework that we're talking about. Is that going to dramatically change as a result of these regulations? Will there be fewer products potentially on the shelves and fewer authorized retailers of CBD or hemp products moving forward?
Well, we hope not. We've got a registration fee for retailers to sell hemp products in the state, the $300 fee. The expectation there is that, most retailers who are currently engaging in a sale, get into compliance, that they get registered and they make sure that they're going to registered processors or distributors as well to get those CBD products. And so we don't want to see the market constrict. We're giving some folks additional time by extending the effective date to get into compliance. We're going to also have a pretty robust outreach program to get these retailers into compliance, make sure they get certified to continue to engage in the business. And so we don't want to restrict the market. It's just, we want to make sure we put these standards in place so that we do have a healthier product on the street.
And what does this mean for the sale of, I guess, for lack of a better description, pre-rolled CBD joints?
Yeah, so one of the actually key components that was changed in the second iteration of the reg, I'm just kind of going into the weeds here, excuse the pun, but smokable hemp is allowed, a whole flower hemp rather. The regulations are clear that the only restriction that we have is that hemp products cannot be clearly marketed and directly marketed and advertised as smoking products. So pre-rolls are not allowed at this point in time. But smokable hemp flower in a jar is allowed. And so that's something that we'll continue to work on. But at this moment in time, there should be no hemp pre-rolls for sale in New York State.
Do you envision the pre-rolled CBD joints, to use that term again, being sold at future adult use recreational marijuana dispensaries whenever those are up and running?
Yeah.
And why is that the right setting for them?
Well, I mean, I think, part of the, well, one, this is a statutory requirement. We're definitely adhering to the laws that govern us. But I think, part of the expansion of the program that we're going to see as we move into the adult use space is kind of a expansion of the product availability types. And so right now, at this point in time, we're reserving that product type for those future discussions and some additional considerations that need to go into place for regulating those products.
And after a quick break, we'll continue our conversation with the state's new Office of Cannabis Management Executive Director, Chris Alexander, who's responsible for implementing rules and regulations governing New York's medical marijuana program, the hemp industry, and a future recreational cannabis market. And when we get back, we'll discuss that future recreational marijuana market, including the ramifications of municipalities preemptively banning dispensaries and the role of current illegal drug dealers in a future legal marketplace.
Support for the Capitol Press Room is provided by the New York State AFL-CIO, a federation of 3,000 unions fighting for working people by keeping New York State union strong. UnionStrongNY.com for more information.
And we're continuing our conversation with the state's Office of Cannabis Management Executive Director, Chris Alexander, who's responsible for implementing the law enacted this spring that legalized adult use of marijuana. And before the break, we were talking about a recent Cannabis Control Board meeting where the state adopted regulations for its burgeoning hemp industry. I was watching the most recent meeting, and former Senator Jen Metzger, who's now a board member for the Cannabis Control Board, talked about the importance of defining craft cannabis. Can you talk about what she's envisioning here and what's laid out in the regulations in terms of a future craft cannabis market? And should I be thinking about this in something akin to the craft beer market?
Yeah, I think that's exactly what she's envisioning. And so the board is signaling They took the time to signal some of the future changes to the regulatory program that they want to make. And that was, you know, amongst one of them. And I think, you know, just making sure, you know, similarly to other products that are certified organic, you know, or locally grown, and, you know, those kind of distinctions is to ensure that we don't want to have, you know, kind of robust false advertising, you know, if a product is not actually craft product. And so that's partially what was being signaled there, I believe. And, you know, you can look forward to our future regulation packages to speak more to what that actually looks like. The other thing, I mean, I would just kind of highlight, because I think it's important, is that we have now a New York hemp product distinction, which is signaling to consumers that, you know, the product that they're consuming was both manufactured and was grown and processed in the state of New York, subject to the standards and regulations that we have in place. And so I think similarly, it's making sure that folks and consumers know what they're putting into their bodies is really the end goal there.
Do you feel like, in light of the regulations that have now taken effect, that farmers in New York come the spring growing season have the confidence and sort of assurance that they can grow and know that there will be a market for their products and a sizable market potentially?
Yeah, I mean, you know, we're trying to, again, reduce the barriers here while still promoting, you know, high standards. You know, we've got around 800 growers or so already operating within the state's hemp market. And so, you know, we want them to know that there are processes. We've got to continue to process some of those applications, which we will be doing in the immediate future. And, you know, and then to get these retailers certified so that, you know, folks can, you know, have a full supply chain and that they understand their products to go to. Part of also was also highlighted by Jen, board member Metzger, was the opportunity of a future kind of a limited hemp farm processor license that would allow those farmers to also do some limited processing on site as well, and to sell some products off the farm as well. So I think, you know, we're thinking about how they can most fully participate and how they have really the most space to continue to grow and to help grow the industry at large.
What role, if any, do you see the existing hemp farmers and processors playing in New York's recreational future?
I mean, it depends. Right now, there's no prohibition that prevents those hemp farmers from, you know, applying for securing a adult use cultivator or processor license. So, I mean, I think there's definitely space for that participation, and the fact that they have already kind of, you know, been subject to the testing and the, you know, addition of the you know, good manufacturing practices. I mean, these are all things that I think will be helpful to have operators in the space know those requirements and those standards. But, you know, I think it's unclear. I think the you know, that discussion is still yet to be had. But I do think, you know, New York will benefit from having, you know, our farmers participate in a robust way in the adult use market.
Well, speaking of farming and their future, do you anticipate there will be farmers in New York who are planting a crop that is designed to be used for adult use marijuana consumption as early as the spring of 2022?
I don't know if I can speak to that timeline. Obviously, we had an estimates and the 18-month window of, you know, getting full license and operational. Definitely super aggressive. I mean, we've only been, you know, operational as an agency and as a board for a month.
Right.
We've definitely been hitting the ground running, but, you know, it's kind of hard to speak to that timeline at this moment. But what I can say is that we will continue to move as fast as humanly possible to get this market set up. But I can't really speak to the timeline, but, you know, we're moving, in case you can't tell, we've been moving very fast to catch up. We've already significantly expanded the existing medical program, allowing access to whole flower, increasing the patient supply, removing the registration fees, and we're, you know, still have some more work to do there in terms of expanding that medical program and, of course, finalize these hemp regs. We're doing quite a bit, and we're going to continue to do so at this pace, but I can't really speak to that full timeline.
Well, I think it's important for listeners to understand there are so many moving parts that you're looking at here, as well as just timelines that you can't do anything about with regards to the approval process for regulations. So can you peel back the curtain and kind of explain all the different balls that you're trying to, I guess, bounce at once and the different regulatory hurdles in terms of timelines that you have to deal with in order to make recreational marijuana something that can be legally grown and legally sold in New York?
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to get too much into the bureaucracy, but one, I definitely want to shout out Governor Kathy Hochul. Her and her team, they've been incredibly helpful. One thing I think the public should understand is that, you know, New York State doesn't set up new state agencies every day.
Right.
And so that's been, you know, in addition to developing regulations, consulting with stakeholders, you know, making sure that we've got a good understanding of current industry standards. You know, we've also been continuing to run an existing medical marijuana program, building out a cannabinoid hemp program, but also staffing up, you know, deciding where our initial budget expenditures should go. I mean, these are all things that are kind of a part of what's going on right now. Not to bore folks with details, but I think it's important just to understand that, you know, we're kind of, I keep saying we're building the plane as we're flying it, but, you know, we are very fortunate to have some of the brightest minds, the folks who were running the medical marijuana program here in New York State are, you know, now fully transferred over and working to build out the adult use program. And we've also been able to recruit some really good talents to come in and help us build this thing out. So, you know, the process of drafting regulations, submitting them to the board, who then approves those regulations, and then submitting them to the public for public comments and reviewing those comments and those issuing those final regs. That's a process. You know, we are working on all things at the same time, juggling all balls at the same time. So we're going to keep doing that, but it does take a little bit of time. And so, you know, definitely asking the you know, folks to understand that. But I do think, you know, it also speaks to the excitement around this program. You know, if you would have told me, you know, 6 years ago, 7 years ago, that we'd be at this place where New York State and the public are so eager for this program to fully launch, I mean, I wouldn't have believed it. You know, we were fighting uphill battles at that time. And now here we are, you know, with, you know, overwhelming public support and excitement, really, on taking a new approach to cannabis policy in the state. And it's incredible. It's incredible. And I think it's just, you know, emblematic of, you know, folks being willing to, you know, just try a different path as it relates to this plant. And to also embrace, you know, some of the principles related to the campaign, which were, you know, investing in communities and repairing some of the harm that's been done. I think, you know, our government partners have been, you know, super committed to that. Our governor's been super committed to that. And so we're going to keep pushing.
As the result of language in the marijuana law, there are hundreds of municipalities around the state that are preemptively prohibiting marijuana dispensaries and consumption sites in their communities, a decision they can potentially reverse in the future if the local leaders determine it would be beneficial or voters essentially demand it with a referendum. Do you think this could hinder the launch of a recreational market in the future?
Plenty of municipalities have not opted out. Mm-hmm. You know, some have even, you know, passed affirmative language saying that they want to, you know, they want to have business in their locality. And so we're going to keep pushing from our front. So I don't think it hinders. Obviously, we want to make sure that New Yorkers across the state have access to regulated products. They still will. They just won't have the dispensary as, you know, immediately close to them, even if they opt out. As, you know, folks, you know, understand, the municipality can opt out of you know, those dispensaries and the on-site consumption. But, you know, the other rest of legalization still applies. And so folks will still have access to products, but it just won't be as immediately accessible as we would like. So it doesn't slow us down. I think it was an important component of the legislation that municipalities had the ability to do so. But I also would flag that, you know, they also have the ability to opt back in, you know, and there's no
right.
penalty for opting out and opting back in. And so we hope that as, you know, regulations roll out, they understand that there's a place for localities to provide input in terms of citing these facilities, these dispensaries, et cetera, that they be willing to participate and see how it goes. And we've seen it across the country. You know, there have been opt-out provisions in every measure that's, you know, come, that's passed across the country. And so we've also seen the opt-outs and the opt-back-ins after folks recognize that, you know, the sky doesn't fall, you know, after legalization. So,
as you think about the creation of a legalized recreational market, what sort of emphasis do you think there should be on incorporating people who operate in the illegal space currently, whether it's on the growing side or the selling side, these so-called legacy entrepreneurs? Should they be actively sort of engaged to participate in a future legal system, or does the state not have a vested interest in making that, helping them make that transition?
I think the word that you used in interest is the right one. The fact of the matter is, you know, the marijuana industry, the cannabis industry in New York State is not new. The regulated industry will be a new one. But, you know, the fact that if we want our program to succeed, if we want to generate the amount of revenue that we hope to generate, if we want to have the impact on communities that we hope to have and, you know, create these new businesses that we hope to create, at some point we have to either provide a pathway for the legacy operators to participate or engage with them in some way, you know, because it's what we see in each of these markets. While the legacy market does not go away with legalization, it's going to have to constrict itself because, you know, it's hard for certain legacy operators to compete with the accessibility, the market options, you know, the choice, the understanding the safety of product. I mean, all of these things that are reasons for a consumer to switch over. These are challenges that legacy operators are going to have. And, you know, I think our goal and a better choice for them would be to participate. And it also makes sure that the program that we build is going to be a more successful one. So I think it's both, you know, it's going to be a choice that, you know, folks have to make. And of course, that activity is still legal. So I'd also, you know, keep that in the air, that is still a legal activity. So, you know, we kind of transition this program, we're transitioning this market as we speak. And, you know, we would want for operators in the space to transition as well, and to understand that there's a benefit to having, for all of us, and having more tested, regulated products out there for consumers. And it's, you know, frankly, it's a better business. you know, definitely encouraging folks to do that.
Well, we've been speaking with Christopher Alexander. He is the first ever executive director of the Office of Cannabis Management. Chris, thank you so much for making the time and walking us through these issues, and good luck with all the work you have ahead of you.
Thank you so much, and hope to talk to you again soon.
Support for the Capitol Press Room is provided by New York State United Teachers, a union of professionals in education, human services, and healthcare.
Join us again for Capitol Press Room, a production of WCNY Connected, Syracuse.